significant bill on the agenda, which is Senate File 238, which is Senator Sharon's. this bill, excuse me, has been heard in the Health Committee, and really the focus of this committee is because of the business effects, if you will, of this bill. So that's what we're going to kind of really focus on, hopefully all the health issues, not all of them, but most of them talked about in the previous committee. We're going to have about 30 minutes of testimony on each side of this issue, and we will be voting on this bill today. There's no reason to postpone it. I think we'll get all the testimony I think that we will need today, and there will be a vote. We're out of here at 3:15. Another committee comes in at 3, so we certainly have to be out of here by then. But with that, Senator, would you wish to give a brief opening remarks on your bill?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Metzen. My name is Senator Kathy Sharon. Is this on?
Okay, we these cell phones. It wouldn't be a senator doing in violation, does it?
Oh no!
Seriously, I'll take a look and see if you have your cell phone disconnected. Where you, that's, Senator, you may continue.
Thank you, Chairman Metzen. My name is Senator Kathy Sharon, and I'm here to present Senate File 238, which is legislation developed to protect the public from the negative health impact of secondhand smoke. Today, you will hear testimony from persons who encourage you to support a strong piece of legislation. It's based on the growth of scientific evidence that's demonstrating conclusively that secondhand smoke is not safe for the general public at any level or dose, and that only the only assurance we have of disrupting this negative health hazard is by eliminating smoking as a practice in enclosed workplaces. And today, you will hear testimony from those who will dismiss this legislation as unnecessary or overzealous or too onerous, an expectation given the economic consequences to businesses and to the nonprofits who depend on the revenues for charitable gambling. And of course, there is the very important issue of personal freedoms and rights, and the responsibility to define the limitations of those rights by the legislature when one person's behavior negatively impacts another. Over the past 20 years, hundreds of scientific studies have shown the dangers associated with secondhand smoke. Starting in 1986, the Surgeon General wrote that involuntary smoking is a cause of disease, including lung cancer, in non-smokers. There have been several reports since then. I'm not going to go through them today because Chairman Metzen indicated that the primary focus would be on the economics today. But I would like you to know that the findings are massive and conclusive. 2006, the Surgeon General released a most comprehensive scientific report. I brought it along here. It's quite lengthy, and I won't be reading it to you. But it's massive and conclusive scientific documents about the adverse effects of involuntary smoking, including cancer and cardiovascular diseases. The report further concludes that there's no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke and that there is no known ventilation system that can adequately reduce the particles and chemicals that are the source of the health concern. The report further states that total absence of exposure is the best and most beneficial way to reduce the risk to the public's health. In statewide polls, and you will see in the materials that we've prepared for you, there should be a manila folder at your desk of materials. The public has communicated clearly throughout the state that they support strong smoke-free laws to protect the public and especially workers from the toxic effects of secondhand smoke. Local governments are taking action around the state. 16 smoke-free ordinances are enacted. 17 states have states with laws in place that require 100% free smoke-free workplaces. And as a result of both local and statewide laws, 6,595 municipalities have 100% smoke-free workplace ordinances. There are also 10 countries, whole countries, Norway, Sweden, Spain, Ireland, Italy, and Bermuda, to name a few, that are smoke-free in their workplace. In addition, organizations whose missions are health and safety, whose research dollars have been spent studying health practices and solutions, have signed resolutions supporting strong workplace protection. It includes the American Cancer Society, the Lung Association of Minnesota, the College of Cardiology in Minnesota, American Heart Association, Minnesota Academy of Family Physicians, just to name a few. And the Surgeon General's report, I simply would like you to know that as a report, it was written by 22, not just one, but 22 experts, into 10 major categories, and then reviewed again by another group of 40 scientists, and then again by 30 more scientists for scientific integrity. And one of those chapters is on ventilation, a hope that I had, a hope that many had, for the method to resolve this issue. But the findings by these multiple scientists, having reviewed the studies on this issue, determined that the 50 carcinogens that are in the side stream that show the causal relationship to multiple health problems and their exposure to the non-smokers and the exposure of those carcinogens to the secondhand smoker cannot be controlled by air cleaning or by mechanical air exchange. So the strength of these findings is consistent with the data over a very long period of time. It's repetitious, it's consistent, and that's what makes it strong data. The debate over the validity of the science is very good. Debate is what helps us make certain that the science that's being presented is valid. But this study by the Surgeon General indicates that we have met that obligation. The economic impact of secondhand smoke on the lives of people and businesses needs to be considered. The economic impact of secondhand smoke on the lives of people and business needs to be considered along with other economic issues, for example, on the bars. When we make decisions whether to restrict smoking policy, we also have to consider the other economic factors that are involved. You will hear testimony today from very, very recent studies of the impact of smoking restriction on bars and restaurants, so I will defer at this time to those experts. However, I'd like to present you with some other economic issues that you should be concerned about. Smokers have twice the lost production time per week, which is a significant loss to business. Families have lost 49,000 family members to secondhand smoke at an enormous personal and financial expense to the family in terms of long-term income. The cost of health care illness associated with secondhand smoke is reported to be $2.6 billion in 2004, and that was for the medical expenses caused by the exposure to secondhand smoke. This is above the cost of health care expected to occur without other kinds of exposure. It's also important to consider the economic values of each year lost due to disability or premature death, the economic losses due to lost wages and fringe benefits, as well as lost household activities, was estimated to be $3.2 billion for disability and premature deaths due to lung cancer and heart disease. This data is in the Manila folder that we've provided for you. The medical costs and economic losses to non-smokers suffering from lung cancer or heart disease due to secondhand smoke is estimated at nearly $6 billion a year. And this does not include children's diseases. I'm here representing those persons who cannot be here to represent themselves because they are already victims of secondhand smoke. And I'm here to represent those of us we know will be victims, but whom we cannot point to or pinpoint today. And I'm here to advance for all of the public who are interested in protection in the public health for a strong workplace protection. It's been advanced by cities and counties, and the businesses would like us to try to even the playing field as best we can within the authority we have. And I'm here to remind us to stay focused on the only real basis for government intervention. When a behavior of one group creates a significant health impact on another, it is the interest of the public through its government to protect the worker and the public from secondhand smoke, and that even anecdotal economics cannot serve as the basis to abandon the health of the general public. With that, I will just make an attempt to walk briefly through the bill. If you would refer to the bill, I'll make some highlights. I think you're probably all fairly familiar with it. Senate file number 404 strengthens the Minnesota Clean Indoor Act by eliminating smoking in public places, places of employment, public transportation, and at public meetings. Section 1 modifies the section. It states that the purpose of the act is to eliminate rather than limit smoking in public places. Let me draw your attention to Section 3, where it defines employment as any indoor area where two or more persons engage in employment or perform services without compensation, for which persons are usually paid. Then I would draw your attention to get to the essence of the bill to Subdivision 1. It restates language deleted elsewhere in the law that allows smoking by participants in scientific studies. Subdivision 2 allows smoking by Native Americans as a part of a traditional spiritual and cultural ceremony. Subdivision 3 states that except for limits on smoking in daycare homes, the act does not prohibit smoking in private residences or automobiles unless they are used for a place of employment or in hotel or motel rooms. And Section 4 allows smoking by customers in tobacco product shops. Subdivision 2 under Section 10 refers to it governs violations. Subdivision 2, paragraph A, refers to the proprietor being charged with a misdemeanor if they, and I would underline this, knowingly fail to comply with the Clean Indoor Act. Paragraph B refers to the smoker who would be charged with a petty misdemeanor if they were in an area smoking where it was prohibited or restricted under this act. Paragraph C and D prohibit retaliation against persons who report violations or exercise any rights in relationship to this act. And then Subdivision 4 allows cities and counties to enact more stringent measures.
Okay.
I think that's it.
We're going to go to 5 minutes after 2 for the proponent, so I encourage everybody to kind of move along. Do you want a first witness I have is B.J.
Mr. Chairman.
Malama, M.D., Senator Tomasoni before that.
Just a clarifying question. Does this, Senator Sharon, does this outlaw smoking in hotels or motels also, in hotel or motel rooms?
Not in the motel room, but in the public places where air is shared.
It says a hotel or motel sleeping room rented to one or more guests.
Yes.
So is that not a hotel room?
Yes.
So it's outlaws smoking in hotels, in all hotel rooms.
I think
that's exempted. That's an exception.
Is that the exception? Let the Senate counsel, did you have a...
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, on page 5,
it's exempt.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, one more question. Somewhere along the way, I read something about being illegal to smoke on golf courses now if someone less than 18 years old is in your presence. Is that in this bill?
That is not in this bill.
Welcome to the committee. Everybody that's going to speak, identify yourself for the tape. So, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sharon, the... Line 2.5, second page. Line 2.5, place of employment includes any indoor area where two or more individuals gratuitously perform services for which individuals are ordinarily paid. My concern is a private club that I know of in Senator Tomasoni's district, where it's actually a house is what it is. And there's a private, it's a men's club, and they pay an annual fee to belong. There are no employees because they all take turns as individual members of the club serving the drinks that they, I'm told, charge very little for. It's just a kind of a neighborhood-type thing. Does this bill prohibit that kind of a private club with membership from allowing, even if they have no employees, prohibit them from allowing smoking?
Senator Sharon, to you.
This language applies to the workplace. and to enclose public places.
Maybe it would be more fair for me to ask that question of council. Council, if there are no employees, private club, there are no employees, does it prohibit smoking in that private club that's probably more a bar than anything else, even if there's no employees?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, I think it's a matter of interpretation. I think it could do that. It's not clear as I read the first three sentences. I mean, if one interpreted mean that it was a place where ordinarily there was somebody who would be paid, which doesn't sound like this, if you interpret it that way, then it wouldn't be. But if you're saying it's the sort of place where they're performing the sort of services where if they perform them elsewhere, they would be compensated, then it would be included. I think it's not clear.
All right, why don't we move along, and if that's, we can work on that language, on the not clear language as we go forward in the next hour and a half. So Senator Bach wants to pursue that. We can work on that. Welcome to the committee, Doctor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bernie Melema. I'm a physician with the Affiliated Community Medical Centers in Wilmer, Minnesota, and also a member of the Minnesota Medical Association, whom I represent today as well. I have letters for Senator Gimsey, our senator from our area, and the rest of the committee here, one for each of you, in support of this bill. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I've practiced for over 30 years in Wilmer, and I come to you today because I believe that a smoke-free law is needed to provide a safe, healthy environment for the workers in Minnesota. I see the effects of secondhand smoke every week I'm in the office. We know that when non-smoking workers are exposed to smoke, they have cancer-causing chemicals in their bloodstream, which can be measured the next day. It's just not breathing in, breathing out. This is there for a while. And so it's no wonder that we see immediate effects, runny eyes, headaches, sore throats, increased phlegm, asthma attacks, emergency room visits, and increased absenteeism. And then the longer-term effects that I'm more concerned about that the patients don't have a clue about, the chance of dying early of lung cancer and of developing heart disease before they should have. I did experience this Friday. I didn't know it was going to happen, but an employee of ours, a part-time employee, a young lady, called in or went home sick. She is generally healthy, but she works one day a week at the Legion, where she is exposed to secondhand smoke rather heavily. She goes home, launders her clothing, takes a shower, and still ends up ill the next day frequently. She's racked up 12, maybe 15 or more $1,000 of costs in CT scans of her sinuses, sinus surgery, and specialist visits, and she still isn't well. One example, huge economic cost to herself, to her employee, us, who are self-insured. It's a cost to the employer as well, and the suffering to her and her family. And more importantly, to my way of thinking, the fact that she's exposed to something of which she's really unaware of the risk of lung cancer and heart disease down the road. My patients need a smoke-free law. Your employees and mine need it, and the people of Minnesota need it. And I would urge you to pass this bill, to send it on for passage without loopholes. Thank you.
Mr. Questions of the doctor. Mr. Mark Manley is next up on the...
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Doctor, are there any examples of people who rack up big medical bills who don't smoke?
Or work in places.
Chairman?
That's what I'm thinking.
The question is, are there examples of people who rack up big medical bills who do not smoke? Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Mark Manley. Welcome to the Minnesota Senate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It's actually quite an honor to be here in front of you today. So thanks for the opportunity to speak. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mark Manley. I am Vice President and Medical Director of Population Health at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota. Prior to joining Blue Cross, I worked for 12 years at the National Cancer Institute, where I was Chief of the Tobacco Control Research Branch. And in that role, I helped to guide a large portion of the nation's research agenda on tobacco. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Freedom to Breathe Coalition that includes nonprofit health organizations, health plans, and hospitals and unions. Tobacco use is a leading cause of preventable death in this country. Tobacco use and secondhand smoke exposure are direct causes of some of the state's most deadly and costliest diseases to treat. Dr. Melema spoke briefly of the health effects, and I'm not going to repeat any of that, but I do want you to know that the science of secondhand smoke is now overwhelming. The U.S. Surgeon General, Richard Carmona, recently stated that the scientific evidence is now indisputable, a word rarely applied to science, but certainly applies in this case. The conclusions of the Surgeon General are consistent with conclusions of a wide variety of prestigious scientific and medical organizations, including the American Cancer Society, the American Medical Association, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, the National Cancer Institute, and many others. I'm not aware of any scientific or medical body that has reviewed the literature of secondhand smoke and found any other conclusion. I want to just say a word or two about some of the economic impacts of tobacco use and secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke has an enormous financial impact on the healthcare system. Minnesota spends about $2 billion each year on the direct healthcare costs related to tobacco use, and that doesn't include the cost of secondhand smoke. At the national level, it's been estimated that $10 billion is spent each year because of secondhand smoke in the United States. As all of you know, healthcare costs are a growing concern of Minnesota businesses and family, and no one who is serious about tackling healthcare reform and cost containment can afford to ignore the economic impact of tobacco and secondhand smoke exposure on our healthcare system. Finally, I'd just like you to be aware that that smoke-free environments help people who are trying to quit. Most smokers say they want to quit, and the Freedom to Breathe Act will make more people successful as they go through that process. Finally, I'd just like to address the issue very quickly that this is a legal product that somehow we shouldn't be regulating in a business. But the fact is that we as regulate many legal products and businesses. My example that jumps immediately to mind is copper wire. Copper wire is a legal product, but you can't run a bare copper wire through your place of business and run electricity through it. It would be dangerous and harmful. So we've put copper wire where it belongs, inside of insulation and inside of walls and away from human contact. And in exactly the same way, we need to remove the secondhand smokes from workplaces in order to protect employees and patrons. Mr. Chair and members, the Freedom to Breathe Act is a reasonable, science-based, and proven approach to a very deadly and costly health problem, and I urge you to support it.
Thank you very much. Any questions of
Mr. Chair?
Dr. Manley, Senator Day?
Neville.
Oh, Neville, excuse me. Senator Neville.
The witness said something about there being no study that shows any differently and that the science is indisputable. There's a 1998 World Health Organization study that showed no relationship. And in 2003, there was this Enstrom-Kabar study that basically said that the linkage or the causal connection is also minimal. Do you have some studies that would concretely disprove either of those?
Absolutely.
I don't want you to test. No. All I want, we're going to take 10 minutes if we get into here's what I want. I'd like you to get copies of those and send them to me. And the other members, too.
The science of secondhand smoke has been reviewed, and it's really thousands of studies reviewed in the Surgeon General's report, and it has looked at the studies that have found it and reached conclusions. Not all studies are in perfect agreement. The point I was trying to make is that scientific bodies that have reviewed the total collection of studies have consistently concluded that secondhand smoke harms non-smokers.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand that. I understand there's at least some dispute that still is out there as to the science. At least in my mind there is. But I would be very interested. I've been trying to keep articles on this for the past year because I knew this topic would come back. I'd be interested in some scientific studies that you could provide to me before this gets heard on the Senate floor, disputing in particular those two studies that I just mentioned.
I'd be happy to provide you scientific evidence. The World Health Organization actually found a somewhat different study than the way it may be being presented to you.
Well, Mr. Chair, based on some reading I did last night, they did a study in 1998 that they came up with conclusions that they chose to suppress. And then they did a subsequent meta-analysis, which is a compilation of a bunch of other studies that came up with a different conclusion. That is true. But their original study in 1998 found that there was very little causal relationship. and that the statistical significance was minor, didn't it?
I don't believe so. I'd be happy to look into the details and share it with you. I do think you ought to take the totality of the research into consideration. This isn't about any single study. This is about the total research, and you need to take that total collection into consideration.
Mr. Chair, I certainly agree with that, and I'm looking for studies that have not been politicized.
I'd be happy to provide those.
I think there's a lot of politics that may be at play here.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair. Senator Tomasoni. Chairman, this question just comes because I'm reading it right here, and so I'm wondering if, and it has nothing to do with my opinion of the Surgeon General's report, but I have a document here that says that the phrase, the evidence is inadequate, appears in the report 52 times, and the phrase, the evidence is suggestive but not sufficient to, appears 56 times in the report. Can you comment on that?
I'd be happy
Mr. Manley.
To, Mr. Chair. The Surgeon General's report is a very, very carefully worded report as was mentioned, dozens of scientists consider exactly what the evidence shows and what can be concluded from it. They have looked through dozens of health effects and decided, is there evidence to say it is definitely causally related? Is it definitely a cause? Is it suggested as a cause, or is there inadequate evidence? And so for things like lung cancer, heart disease and respiratory illnesses, they've been very clear that that secondhand smoke causes those diseases. For other conditions, they said the evidence is only suggestive or in some cases insufficient to justify a conclusion.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, just in brief response to Senator Neville's questions, I should note that Governor Pawlenty's health care cost task force, chaired by former U.S. Senator David Durenberger, recommended that expanding the Clean Indoor Air Act was an important strategy for reducing the impact of tobacco smoke and reducing health care costs in Minnesota. And I'll also note that the first big Surgeon General's report dealing with secondhand smoke was issued by President Reagan's Surgeon General.
Okay. We're going to move along. Thank you, sir, Doctor. Michael Brommelkamp. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Metzen. Members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Mike Brommelkamp. I'm the co-author of a research study along with Dan Stoltz, whose primary aim is to measure the direct and aggregate economic impact of various smoke-free ordinances that were implemented throughout the state of Minnesota in 2004 and 2005. I do have copies of that report for distribution to the committee. This study aims to take a long-term perspective of the aggregate economic effects of smoke-free ordinances. It's not intended to magnify short-term impacts or draw premature inferences from incomplete or insufficient data. It is also not intended to serve as a forecasting tool. It's an independent perspective of the aggregate economic impacts of the smoke-free ordinances. The report looks at seven jurisdictions where smoke-free ordinances were implemented during 2004 and 2005 in the state of Minnesota as a whole. Those seven jurisdictions were Beltrami County, Hennepin County, Ramsey County, City of Bloomington, Golden Valley, Minneapolis, and the City of Moorhead. This report measures the direct economic impact of smoke-free ordinances by analyzing the changes in relationships among four key statistics within defined geographic areas, city, county, or state. Those four key statistics are aggregate sales, population, numbers of employees, and numbers of establishments. Now, the components of a credible economic impact study require objective data from independent sources, and this report relies on data from the Department of Revenue, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the Department of Administration, Demographic Center, and the U.S. Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics. Components of a credible economic impact study also require that data points after the law was implemented and for several years before be used. This report uses data from 1994 through 2005 and provides a strong foundation for interim analysis. The components of a credible study require that methods be used that control for trends and fluctuations. This report includes data adjusted for inflation and changes in populations. It also includes trend lines to aid any reader in viewing the data. The last component of a credible economic impact study is a control for general economic trends. Revenues are adjusted in this report for inflation using the Consumer Price Index. I have three observations to share with the committee today. The findings show that there was no apparent aggregate impact on the local economies examined in this report or in the state of Minnesota as a whole as a result of the smoke-free ordinances. Second, following the implementation of these ordinances, the numbers of hospitality establishments increased in the communities where data was available, and the numbers of employees increased in all those communities except for one where data was available, suggesting a growing economic environment. Lastly, would like to note that it would be helpful to look at 3 or 4 years of data following smoke-free ordinance implementation to monitor these trends over time. Very difficult to arrive at concrete conclusions with just 1 year of data. However, the historical data that has been accumulated and plotted graphically in this report from 1994 through 2005 does provide a strong foundation for interim analysis. Concludes my comments. Thanks for the opportunity to appear before you today.
Any questions of Mr. Michael Rommelkamp? Yeah. Senator Day?
Oh. Scoy.
So, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Rommelkamp, I'm looking at your information here for Beltrami County, and, you know, you're taking a county average that includes the city of Bemidji and applying that as if that there's no economic impact. But it appears to me that what the smoking ban does is it kind of picks some winners and losers in the food and beverage industry. And I have a fair amount of information from Beltrami County. I happen to represent a fair amount of that. And people from Wasquish, revenue decline of $46,000, 17% food sales, 29% decrease in liquor sales. During a time when the walleye season was opened up, they should have been having an increase. Other bars near Bemidji, sales down $78,000, have laid off people. Place in 10 strike, sales down 40%, gone from 2 full-time to 3 part-time. Other place in Turtle River, revenue down 35%. Turtle Creek Saloon down 38%. Bemidji Legion down $10,000 per month. Gambling receipts down, you know, from 2.8 million to 1.3 million. So while the county average might be okay, there certainly have been winners and losers within the mix. And I don't know how your study can deal with that, but it certainly seems to be something that we as a legislature should be taking into account when we're making this case.
Sir.
Chair, Senator, I'm not quite sure what the question was, if that was a statement or a question, but let me clarify the position of the study a little bit, in that our charge was to do an independent, objective view of the aggregate economic impact. And while we can't suggest whether or not individual businesses have been economically impacted, that certainly wasn't within the scope of this study, and we certainly can understand that. It would be impossible to study this unless, you know, bar owners were able to open their books for analysis, and that was, again, not within our charge. I'm a CPA in public practice. I know that individual businesses, you know, are affected by many factors. You got competition, road construction, the economy, weather, et cetera. It's only valid to look at the community and state data for the purposes which we performed this study. And we certainly understand that that there are winners and losers, but it's our belief that putting all businesses on a level playing field, could be a way to respond to that. But it certainly wasn't within the purview of our study to indicate that there are no losers.
Let us go ahead. Senator Letts.
Senator Metz and Senator Skoy, the studies nationwide that have looked at economic impact have indicated, yes, there is sometimes a rather substantial drop in the short term in individual business receipts, but that on average, after a period of 1 year, business receipts have returned to the previous levels or have exceeded previous levels. So it'd be very important to know how long a time frame is involved in the numbers that you have, and frankly, what steps were taken by the business establishment's owners to try to draw in new customers.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Letts, the point I was trying to make is that we will create winners and losers within the state if we pass the statewide ban, as Beltrami County passed their countywide ban, and it's been in place for a little over a year now. And, I mean, I didn't read all of the information here, but the Keg and Cork in downtown Bemidji says they lost $56,000 in gross revenue, loss of customers, no longer patronize our business. They have regained $18,000 of that in 06. So, actually, we've got 05 and 06, which would be 2 years. And, you know, it's just that as we're looking at this, we have to know that there's going to be some pretty significant negative ramifications to businesses in some parts of the state. And perhaps as this bill's moving forward, we ought to try to figure out a way to make some accommodations to not be quite so negative to those establishments.
Okay. Senator, or excuse me, Dr. Gene Forrester. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Dr. Jean Forrester. I'm a professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota. I'm here to provide information about the economic effects of clean indoor air policies on the hospitality industry to summarize the studies that are in the literature. As you know, the economic impact of clean indoor air policies has been a subject of intense debate in the public policy arena all across the U.S. Restaurant and bar owners have consistently predicted negative effects on sales and/or employment if such policies were applied to their businesses. Given the intensity of this debate, guidelines were developed on how to objectively evaluate economic data from bars and restaurants. As the previous testifier said, it is important to use objective sources of data, to use several years of data before and after the policy, and to take into account other factors that influence the economic climate, such as inflation. Objective data are those typically reports filed by the business with government agencies, such as taxable sales, employment levels, and number of licenses. In the numerous studies using objective sources of data, results have consistently shown that clean indoor air policies have no negative economic impact on hospitality businesses taken as a whole. Long and short-term analyses of sales tax data in California found no negative economic effects. Similarly, Florida, New York, Delaware, and Massachusetts have all seen no negative economic effects on revenue or employment from state-level policies. At least 20 cities across the U.S., from Fayetteville, Arkansas to Corvallis, Oregon, have also found no negative economic effects on hospitality businesses, sales, or unemployment due to clean indoor air policies. Outside the U.S., Ireland, Italy, Australia, New Zealand, and Canadian provinces have all reported results consistent with these findings. Despite this evidence, the perception of serious economic losses persists. An evaluation of the quality of the reports on the economic impact of clean indoor air policies on hospitality businesses found that all of the studies reporting a negative effect were funded by the tobacco industry or their affiliates, 100%. These studies funded by the tobacco industry were more likely to use subjective outcomes such as perceptions of business owners and were unlikely to be peer-reviewed and thus not considered scientifically credible. The evidence of no economic effects clearly does not take into account individual businesses that may have been affected, and I'm not suggesting that this doesn't happen. These studies look at the hospitality businesses taken as a whole in a community or a state, and credible, scientifically valid studies consistently show no negative economic effect of clean indoor air policies on bars and restaurants overall in communities or states.
Questions of Dr. Forrester? Senator Bach.
Dr. Forrester, are you aware, have there been any studies done about the revenue impacts, the taxes that a state receives after a ban goes into place? And my reason for asking, Mr. Chairman, is the city of Duluth has a proposal in front of the legislature to build a new arena. And for their share of the project, they're proposing that they raise their food and beverage tax by 0.75% to help pay those bonds. And in Duluth, I believe they banned smoking in restaurants, but they allow it in bars. So I'm wondering, I mean, in the case of the city of Duluth, is there going to be some tax revenue impact to the city so that somehow they might not be able to satisfy their bond obligations? Because the legislature has only given them certain authority for a fixed amount to collect. And I'm a little concerned that if this does have some impact on their revenue stream, they're going to be back here next year saying, oh, you didn't give us enough tax money because now our tax receipts on beverages in bars is down significantly from what we had thought they were going to be. Have there been any studies about how these kind of bans impact tax revenues to either a city or the state?
Dr. Forrester.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes. Most of the studies I reported on specifically used tax revenues as the objective data, revenues that were reported by the businesses to taxable revenues reported by the businesses to the state. And those are the data that show no economic impact. So I wouldn't expect that Duluth would find an economic impact either.
Senator Buck.
I just, Mr. Chairman, Doctor, with all due respect, there's got to be a tax impact to the state. You know, I mean, I don't know what King Wilson's going to say when he comes up here, but there's got to be some impact of charitable gambling and the combined receipts tax that the state receives. I just can't believe there's not some tax impact. I was hoping there was some study that could tell us that. I mean, we do have, and I don't smoke, but I do care about the revenues coming in that we pay for everything else with. You know, I think we collect about $450 million a year in taxes off tobacco. We need that money. You know, it's unfortunate we have to get it that way, and it seems to be popular to raise it that way because most of the people don't pay when we do that. But if there are some impacts to revenue, we need to figure that out before we pass this, or we're going to be coming back here facing a budget shortfall, and this will at least be some contributing factor to it. So if anybody comes across anything, the tax chair would like to know.
Senator Latz, then we're going to move on.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, there actually was a Duluth sales tax study, a before and after study that was done from before they had a smoking ban in Duluth, and for a while it was a total smoking ban in Duluth, and then afterward. And they found that in establishments where there was alcohol sold and where there was not alcohol sold, that their sales tax revenues continued to rise. So over a longer period of time, I'm not saying within a few months, but over an extended period of time, a year and out and longer, their sales tax revenues continued to rise in Duluth.
Well, Senator
Chairman, Senator Latz, my point is they have bond obligations, and they can't wait for a year or 2 years or whatever for the revenue to then stabilize when they have a bond that they have to pay off. So. Senator Sharon, I'm going to vote for the bill. I just hope that we make sure that we understand what the impacts are.
Senator Sharon, did you wish to comment?
Yes, I understand what Senator Bach is saying. I think that there are a number of things that we might be needing to consider in the long term, the implications. I would ask, though, that the bill be passed because the motivation for it is to protect the public health and to protect especially the person who is in that workplace, and that if there are, although the data is suggesting to us in an aggregate way, that we do not have to be concerned about the overall loss of employment, the overall loss of revenue, and the overall earning of tax receipts in the state of Minnesota, that there may be some incremental or individual stories that we'll have to resolve in the future. So nothing we can do today can guarantee you, as the tax chair, that there won't be people coming back later saying that what we anticipated would be our tax capacity is not what it was. Not only this regulation, but other things that are happening as well. And Chairman Metzen, did you get the message that we have someone?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sally Reynolds from the Backstreet Boogie Band. That's what it says. Sally, how are you?
Hello.
Thank you. You got to go out boogieing or something? You got to leave at 1:30. So.
Yes, actually, a correction. It's the back seat boogie band.
Oh, it says Backstreet.
If
back
interested in vintage
seat.
60s rock and roll.
Where you?
Backstreet, they're the boys or something. I don't know. Everyone calls us that. And I appreciate you.
Where are they playing, or where should we go tonight?
We're not playing tonight, unfortunately, but you can almost always catch us at Taste of Minnesota on the 4th of July. So
that's a little wait, but go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, so
all right.
That down.
Ms. Reynolds, you proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sally Reynolds, and I've lived in St. Paul since 1985, and I am a professional singer and musician. I've been earning my living in the music business since 1980, and I perform in singing groups, I do theatrical shows, I'm also an accompanist and teacher. Currently, since 1995, I've been a singer and a band member with the Backseat Boogie Band, and we perform in and around the Twin Cities. We've played bars, restaurants, receptions. In St. Paul, we've also played in cities in Washington County, Hennepin County, and Goodhue County. Performing is my livelihood. It's the way I make a living and feed my teenagers and provide financial support to my family. And I'm here today to express my support for a statewide law to make all of Minnesota's workplaces smoke-free. In my line of work, smoke-filled workplaces affect me greatly. One of the most important tools of my trade is my voice, and I can tell you that secondhand smoke is very hard on the vocal cords. As a singer, I know that once my voice starts to go, I can't sing very well and I lose my ability to earn a living, and that's very frightening. You might argue that I could choose whether or not to work in a certain environment. But in my case, as a musician, I have found that I have to go where the work is, and I need to accept jobs when I can so I can pay my bills. And also, as a band, to build our business with gigs, it's in our interest to accept all of our job offers. If we refuse an offer for a booking, then we probably won't be asked back by that establishment or by any other establishment that the booker is related to. So it's very important to have that, to have the option or be able to work in the smoke-free environment for that reason. Since the smoking restrictions have been implemented in St. Paul and Minneapolis, I can tell you as a performer that those venues have been much better to work in. Singing has been much easier, and I know that I'm not at risk from damage to my vocal cords from smoke. And also, just an added benefit, I don't have to dry clean my clothes that I wear after every performance because they smell a lot better. I look forward to the passage of a statewide law that will ensure that my voice and my livelihood is protected no matter where I accept a job. And I urge you to support protections from secondhand smoke for all workers. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, we'll hear from Christine Beckman, SEIU.
Welcome.
Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Members of the committee, my name is Kristen Beckman, and I work for the 28,000 Service Employees International Union members here in Minnesota. Most recently, you may have heard of SEIU and our unlikely partnership with Walmart in calling for health care reform. Now, I can assure you that after years of being one of Walmart's biggest critics of their employment practices, it caused waves, particularly in the labor movement, for our willingness to stand up with Walmart and call for health care reform. But more and more, business and labor, even the most entrenched enemies, are coming together and calling for someone to do something about the crushing cost of health care in this country. The legislation that you have before you today would do something about those rising health care costs. In Minnesota alone, $1.6 billion is spent on treating smoking-related diseases. Research shows that when states pass comprehensive policies, not only does it decrease the exposure to secondhand smoke, it also decreases tobacco use, therefore decreasing the smoking-related illnesses and the cost of health care that are borne by the community members. I understand there are individual businesses that are worried about the impact of this smoke-free ordinance on their particular business. But I hope that this committee will think about the entire business community and the entire labor community in making your decision. In having affordable health care, we can be together more competitive in today's market. When the CEOs of General Motors stand up and say that there are $1,400 worth of cost on every car due to health care costs, it's one of the main reasons why we're not competitive with foreign companies who have a universal health care system and control their costs. By voting for this smoke-free ordinance, you will contribute to the work of controlling health care costs and thereby help all business and all labor. While I ask you to consider all businesses and not just individual businesses, I ask you to consider the well-being of all workers as well. All service workers deserve protection from secondhand smoke. The science is clear. Secondhand smoke is dangerous. And a worker in a bar and a private industry club is no different than a worker in a restaurant. This is a workplace safety issue. This issue deserves attention by this committee, and all service workers deserve protection. So as you consider how you vote today, I ask you to think about all businesses. I ask you to think about all workers. And I please ask you to vote to pass a comprehensive bill that has no exemptions. Thank you.
Any questions of the witness?
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, in your letter you have, and you just repeated, that cost of health care is estimated to be $1.6 billion in Minnesota. Could you get me the studies that calculate that number? And
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to.
Based on which it is? Okay, thanks.
Very good. And Mr.
Senator.
Chairman.
Thomas Honey.
Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Beckman, I don't think using GM's estimate of health care costs in this context is valid, because I think it's a whole different context. It's all about the cost of health care in the United States being way more than the health cost of health care in Canada, and that they can build a car for cheaper in Canada. So whether or not it has anything to do with smoking, I don't think it has anything to do with smoking at all. It's all about the system that we're in.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I guess what I'm trying to say is there is a link between smoking-related disease and illness and health care costs, and that there's a link between health care costs and our inability to be competitive in a world market and competitive against other countries that have universal health care systems. And so I do think that when we take steps as a state to control health care costs, we take steps as a state to help all of our businesses and all of labor.
Next, we'll hear from Bernadette Chalbeck, Veterans for Smoke-Free Air. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Bernadette Klebeck, and I am a veteran of the United States Air Force and the Minnesota Army National Guard. I am also the first vice commander of the Coon Rapids American Legion. I would like to make it clear that I am not here representing any organization. I am speaking for myself and my experience as a veteran. My main role of the first vice commander is membership. which unfortunately is dwindling down quickly across the nation, and Minnesota is no exception. As I make phone calls and talk to veterans, the number one reason that veterans do not join veterans clubs is because of the smoking. As veterans, we must remember that our main mission is to honor the dead by helping the living. Unfortunately, many needs of veterans are going unheard and unmet because so many veterans are unable to play a role in their veterans' organizations. To quote the National Commander of the VFW, Gary Kirpius, new members who want to believe that the VFW is more than just a bar. Soldiers coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan have families. They have spent long periods of time away from them and do not want to come home and join organizations where they cannot bring their families. In addition, there are many veterans, due to medical reasons, who cannot enter buildings where smoking is allowed and are unable to join veterans clubs. In Coon Rapids American Legion, where smoking is allowed, the club is unable to donate money to community organizations because of decreased membership and low sales. Exempting American Legions and VFWs from smoke-free policies will not save veterans clubs. They have many options, and if veterans organizations are going to survive, they must change to meet the needs of today's soldiers. They need to become family-friendly. This movement has already started across the country, including Minnesota, where veterans clubs have become gyms, daycare centers, and coffee shops. In Elk River, the VFW has become a community center with a focus on youth sports. I joined the military to serve my country and protect the Constitution, not Philip Morris. It was an honor for me and an obligation for me to serve. But I, like many veterans, did not come home to die. As a veteran, it saddens me to see veterans on opposite sides. But we can come together by putting the smoking aside and moving our clubs in a new direction. After all, the needs of veterans ought to be more important than a cigarette. I often hear the opposition complain about government intruding on their personal rights. However, we the people have the right and the duty to intrude on what is and is not acceptable in our communities. 69% of the people in Minnesota want all workers to be protected from the dangers of secondhand smoke, with no exceptions. And we must remember, it is not just the workers employed directly by the restaurant and bar owners that face the dangers of exposure to secondhand smoke. It is also the workers who deliver products, repair equipment, and government employees who inspect the food and the buildings to ensure code compliance. Many of these workers are also veterans as well. And to tell them to get a different job if they do not like that is an insult to all workers and does not reflect the values of Minnesota. After all, no one should ever have to choose between their job and their health. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, how many members does the Veterans for Smoke-Free Air have?
The veterans, we just started a few months ago. We started with three. We are now up to, I believe it's over 12. We originally started meeting in about 12, 2 months ago.
12 legions? Or
no, 12 members. 12 members, but we have just started a couple months ago.
Just to help me understand a little how this has been playing out in the VFWs and the American Legions, because if what you say is true and you could increase your membership by going smoke-free, are there examples of Legions or VFWs that have chosen to do that in order to, can you provide me with a list of some clubs that have done that?
Yes, Senator, I can provide you with a list.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Gerlach on this.
Thank you.
Witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask a follow-up on that, and that is that why is the Coon Rapids American Legion smoke-free today? And if not, why not? I think that you have that choice. I mean, the board can make that choice. Has it been, has a motion been made at an exec board meeting, and has it been voted on, and why isn't the, if that's the future? And I, what you're saying has enormous validity. I'm a member of a Apple Valley American Legion post, and I get what you're saying about the generational thing, but why is it that if you're not smoke-free, why aren't you?
Senator, there is discussion within American Legions of some of them that have not to begin to go smoke-free. There are discussions within some. And, of course, each person only has one vote. In the Coon Rapids American Legion, there's only maybe an average of 15 veterans who even show up for the meetings, where in the past the room would be full. And, of course, many of the ones who would prefer it to be smoke-free have already left the Legion, so there is no vote there. Many of them can't, for medical reasons, can't even enter the building to vote because they cannot even be in within smoking environments for a short time, and therefore they cannot have the vote.
All right, we're going to hear from the last witness for the proponents, Betsy Gates from Antones. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Gates. I'm a manager and co-owner of a 300-seat restaurant in St. Cloud, Minnesota, established by my parents over 34 years ago. I just want to state I'm not here professing to be an expert in any economic or medical areas. But like many people in this room, I have been personally touched by the effects of smoking and secondhand smoke. 5.5 years ago, my mother was diagnosed with cancer. She had quit smoking over 12 years ago, but she worked in the hospitality industry. She was never able to heal the damage that she had done. January 5th marked the 5-year anniversary of my mother's death. She was 67. Although my personal story of loss affects my decisions, it's not the reason I'm here before you today. I'm here as a business owner and one who is not afraid to say I support this bill. Opponents to this bill will tell you that businesses will close because people will not be able to smoke in their establishments. People are social by nature and will continue to come together in public places regardless of any limitations on where they can smoke. Personal choice for the bar owners is often given as a reason to oppose this bill. I understand the issue of personal choice. We have made the choice at our restaurant to go smoke-free. But again, the social nature of people brings them back to an atmosphere they enjoy. Smokers who initially said they would not return to our restaurant have been back, even with a choice to go somewhere else. If we want to talk economics, business has never been better. Having been to states and regions with non-smoking legislation, I can tell you I firmly believe the reports that show non-smoking legislation does not have a financial impact. But I will remind you the hospitality industry itself is extremely volatile. Restaurants and bars open and close almost every day for many reasons. There's always winners and losers. Please keep in mind when reviewing any reports, the opening of a new chain restaurant in a community will have a much greater impact on local independent businesses than any smoking legislation ever could. Others opposing the bill will talk about ventilation. By their own argument, they're agreeing that they know the effects of secondhand smoke is harmful, so let's vent it away. Since the cost of venting even a small business could cost tens of thousands of dollars, this decision would be more economically detrimental to many independent businesses than a smoking ban. Restaurant management is what I know, it's what I do. Almost every job I have had has been in the industry or teaching others about the industry. So when opponents to this bill tell me or others working in the industry to get another job, I take issue. For much of my staff, this is their other job. I have teachers who cannot make ends meet on their salary. I have a business professional who has medical bills for his daughter to pay for. And I have parents for whom this job allows them the flexibility they need to care for their children. All of these people do this job not just by choice, but sometimes by necessity. If everyone in the hospitality industry who took issue with working in a smoking environment left their job to find another one, it would leave quite a hole that the Minnesota job market would be unable to absorb. Did they accept the risk? Yes, out of necessity. We now have the opportunity to protect these jobs by protecting the labor force itself. Not long ago, Minnesota passed a new law, a new bill making seatbelt use mandatory. Like smoking, seatbelt use is considered a personal choice. In a hearing just like this, I believe Senator Murphy stated that if we had 90% compliance with the seatbelt law, we could save 40 to 50 lives per year. What if it was only 15 to 20 lives? What if we could save 4 or 5 lives? What if it was only one life? What one person would we tell they are not worth the legislation? This bill before you asks the same question. How many lives are we willing to risk? What one person do we tell they are worth less than the fear of a loss of a few dollars? Thank you.
Questions of the... Okay, now, Senator, we're going to get into the opponents. Mr. Steve Watson. Hospitality Minnesota, the Minnesota Restaurant Association. Welcome to the committee. The proponents was about 55 minutes, and we'll try to allot the same time and maybe try to get into the amendments yet today. But welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Steve Watson, and I am president of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. I want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to address you on this very important issue as it relates to the hospitality industry. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the Association's Board of Directors, our Legislative Committee, and the over 1,200 restaurants that belong to the Minnesota Restaurant Association. The issue of a statewide smoking ban has been much cause for concern and debate amongst our Board of Directors and membership. We have always held the position that it is not the role of government to dictate how our industry chooses to serve our guests. As private business owners, we feel it is our decision whether to allow smoking in our establishments, just as it is the customer's decision whether or not to patronize our businesses, and an employee's decision whether or not to work for us. We continue to hold that position today. However, with more and more local governments choosing to intervene in private businesses and the probability of a statewide ban becoming increasingly likely, our legislative committee has thus asked us to become more involved in the debate in order to help mitigate the negative effects a statewide smoking ban would have on our industry. To that end, I would like to briefly mention the four concerns of the restaurant industry. First, we believe any statewide ban, if enacted, should include all industry segments, no exceptions. We feel the best way to limit the negative impacts a ban would have on the industry is to ensure that all businesses are held to the same standard. That would include businesses in Hibbing, all the way down to Rochester, Minneapolis, St. Paul, across the state. Additionally, if you are truly concerned about the health of employees, it is hard to justify how the health of a server in an establishment that serves 51% alcohol is less important than a server in an establishment that serves 51% food. We do thank the author for the current language that includes all industry segments and encourage the committee to keep it in that form. Our second concern is with the penalties of the owners. We believe that any penalties for violating a smoking ban should be placed on the person who is actually doing the smoking, not the owner who is trying to run his or her business. This legislation charges the smoker with a petty misdemeanor, but the owner is charged with a full misdemeanor, punishable by 90 days in jail or a $1,000 fine and or both. Our third concern is with preemption. We believe that if the legislature wants to create a level playing field in the state, the ban should preempt local smoking ordinances. We currently have a patchwork of smoking ordinances throughout the state, and the language in this bill would allow that to continue. A ban needs to be uniform in language across the state. Lastly, we would ask that you think about the impact this legislation will have on the small business owners throughout the state. This bill will have an impact on those revenues. Our industry is one that has small profit margins, with many small businesses struggling to turn a profit. The loss in revenue from a smoking ban will force establishments to close. We hope that you will all look for ways to offset the business costs of this bill through some sort of tax break. Tourism is one of the top revenue-producing industries in our state, with over $10 billion in annual sales. The very people that serve as hosts for our tourists and our guests to Minnesota are the small restaurant businesses you may force to close if this legislation is not done properly. Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Watson, I just want to make sure I understand you correctly. Is the position of the Restaurant Association that bars should not be exempted from the proposed bill? Is that correct?
At this point, we are asking for it to be uniform across the state. That is correct.
And, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Watson, then you also would oppose an exemption for service clubs like the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars?
At this point, sir, as we said, we would like it uniform from north to south, east to west.
And, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Watson, with regard to preempting local ordinances, this bill only addresses indoor air. I would assume that your association is not taking a position with regard to local ordinances that address outdoor air?
Mr. Watson. I'm sorry. At this point, no, we're not taking a position on that.
Senator Neville.
First of all, just Senator Latz jogged something in my mind. He says it applies only to indoor air, but we're defining indoor as meaning something with two walls, so it could be outside. It could have two walls and two walls that are open to the outside, it seems. But my question to the witness is, you asked us to be sensitive to small business. Well, what can we do for small business in this bill? I mean, you're asking to treat everybody the same, but then you're asking for something different for small business?
No, sir. I believe the point I was trying to make, that if this is a uniform ban, everybody would be treated equally.
Okay.
And in my mind, a no-smoking ban is very simple. No smoking, period. You know, get rid of all the garbage that mixes it up, and if there's going to be a no-smoking ban, then have it statewide so everybody is on the same playing field.
Mr. Chair, maybe this would be a good time just to ask the author a question. Does this bill apply to Indian casinos?
This bill... The only part of the bill that relates to the tribes is their religious rituals that would allow for smoking during religious rituals, which is stated in the bill. But there is no language in the bill referring to a sovereign nation or an authority over which we do not have authority. It doesn't refer to Iowa. It doesn't refer to Wisconsin. And it doesn't refer to the independent tribes.
Well, let me ask, Mr. Chair, more precisely, is it your intent that if this bill passes as it's written now, that there could be no smoking at the Indian casinos? Is that your intent?
Senator Sheridan.
Thank you, Chairman Metzen. It is not the intent, and it is not the authority of the state of Minnesota to either disallow or allow, to exempt or include the nations, the Indian nations, in this piece of legislation any more than we would include the state of Iowa or the state of Wisconsin.
Well, Mr. Chair, my understanding is that if we pass a prohibitive law, then it applies even on Indian reservation land. If we pass a regulatory law, then it's not. So is it your intent to pass a prohibitory law or a regulatory law?
I think that the assumption that you're making about that is in dispute, about whether or not that, in fact, is true. I know that there is litigation occurring about that at the national level. So it is not the intent of this law to exercise any authority that the state does not have in relationship to independent tribes. And I would refer to John Fuller. I think that he could speak more directly to this law.
Did you want to...
Mr. Care Fuller. To give us an opinion on that as the bill is written now? Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
There is nothing in here that exempts casinos, as I mean it. You stated the distinction very well, which is under the current regime, I mean, the federal government has authority over the tribes, the state has, to some extent we get it from the federal government, and it is a regulatory civil. On one side, and the prohibitory criminal.
So if this is perceived as a civil regulatory law, which I've received some information that says it, there's arguments that it does. Of course, there's arguments that it doesn't. And in the paper this weekend, there was a case in the D.C. Federal Circuit which held that the federal labor laws, the organizing laws, applied to Indian reservations. So we have sort of a question under the current law, is this one or the other? Then we have a question, is the law evolving to something different? And that latter question I can't answer, just to say that it's 3-0, or it was a decision of the District Court of Appeals that's going to the Supreme Court.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand that the law is evolving, perhaps, in this area. But what we should be able to get an answer to is, what's our intent? What is the author's intent in this bill? Is it the intent, if we are legally able to do it, to make it apply at Indian casinos, which are hospitality organizations as well, or is it the intent that they not? And then whatever the law is, it is, and maybe we'll have to come back and change it someday, but you ought to have an intent right now. I mean, if legally we are able to do so, is it your intent that this apply at the casinos as well? Maybe that's another way of putting it. Let me ask Senate counsel. Is this bill drafted in a way that your opinion is that it's regulatory or prohibitive in nature?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Neville, looking at the underlying law, it's not clear to me what the distinction is. It seems like it's a matter of art. I mean, I think what you're saying is, do you want a provision in the bill that says, to the extent authorized by federal law, these sections apply to whatever it is you want?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fuller, is it possible to draft this bill in a way that makes it more clear that our intent is to be prohibitory?
Mr. Fuller.
Yes, it's possible to two things. One is to do what I just said, say that to the extent authorized, and the other would be to make a declaration of that. But I think the courts would probably, to some extent, ignore our self-definition of the law, I mean, and use whatever underlying tests that they would employ. Okay. And my understanding of just very, very little research is that, at least I'm not comfortable telling what the diameters or the parameters of each of these segments are. It seems like they blur together, and it's a particular court may come up with a different decision.
Well, Mr. Chair, thanks for giving me some leeway on this, because it just seems to me that's kind of the big elephant in the room in terms of the impact that it's going to have on the smaller businesses, especially the ones that are within 25 miles of a casino. If we're wrong about this and people can, then the smokers can go there, that's going to have a dramatic impact on restaurants and bars that are within, 25 short driving distance, it seems to me. So, if it's possible, that's an issue that I think.
Well, Senator Sharon's going to look at that, but okay. She, like some of us, think that they're a sovereign nation and what can you tell them and what can you tell Iowa to do and North Dakota, but. She'll probably look at that. Next,
Chairman Netson, I would also I'd like to talk about a second part of what is being said here. Besides the issue of authority, is the issue of significant impact if this law does not apply to the tribal nations. I think you have to apply the same principle that has been indicated throughout the testimony here. Right now, we are living under a circumstance where there are communities that have strong smoking cessation, and communities that do not. So that phenomena is in place right now, and we are seeing that businesses are able to be successful under those circumstances.
Thank you very much. Senator Day, and then we'll move on to the next.
Mr. Chairman, it's a nice discussion talking about the sovereign nations that are like Iowa and France,
only in the
and whatever, except that it doesn't seem that it's that way when it gets to voting and a lot of other things that happen. So,
Mr. Chairman?
The only reason I mention the states is just because we can't tell other states what to do and we can't tell this nation what to do usually. So, okay, we'll move on.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Watson, don't go away.
Uh-oh. You were almost out the door.
Almost, yeah.
You got to move. Got to move a little faster there, Watson. When you're done, just get up and run.
Run.
Senator Tomasoni.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Watson, you're listed as an opponent, and so I'm confused as to what I just heard out of your mouth. And so is what you said if make it statewide mean make smoking totally illegal? Is that what you were saying?
Or? That is correct, sir.
So you were saying do the right thing, get rid of smoking completely.
We're opposed to the way it is currently.
So you're opposed. So you're opposed to the bill.
Correct. The way it, in its current form.
And the only way that you would be for it is if we just outlawed smoking completely, like prohibition statewide.
I think you need to look at it on a statewide basis and have it equally across the state, correct?
But are you talking about just bars and restaurants, or are you talking about every place in the state so smoking would be illegal here?
Well, I'm talking about bars, restaurants, the private clubs, the food and beverage industries, the hospitals.
So you want smoking to be legal, but if we're going to have a smoking ban, then you want it to be applied statewide. Because
that is
this,
correct.
But that's what this bill does, doesn't it?
Correct.
So you are supporting the bill or you are not supporting the bill?
If it's statewide with the pre-exemptions out of it, we would support it.
So you're not
on the wrong column?
So you're not really an opponent then. Okay.
Senator Bach. Well,
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Neville's point, you know, somebody just distributed a letter from the Lucky Moose Bar and Grill in Walker. Brand new restaurant, 35 people. I have to believe that if the casinos are not included in this law, that we're going to do a great deal of damage to this business. I know there's a casino right on the outskirts of Walker. I don't know the name of it, but it's not very far away. And it seems to me if we think this is a good idea, then let's apply it to everybody. And I think, you know, I mean, the courts ultimately will determine whether we can do that or not. But I sure would hate to vote for something here that puts the Lucky Moose Bar and Grill and their $1.3 million investment in jeopardy. I would rather err on the side of the court saying, well, you don't have the authority to do that, than me actually vote for them if the intent of this is to exclude them. And I think there's a question on workplace issues and on whether we do have some authority on in casinos. So I would rather they were included as a matter of intent. Well, and I don't know if we do, but I'd rather they were.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think Canada ought to be included, too. Why don't we just throw Canada in there? How about Mexico and England and all these other countries, too? Because what sits right down there on Prairie Island is a country of its own. We don't have any. We do not have the right to tell them what to do, period.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Neville.
Let me clarify that. There's something called Public Law 280, which does allow the state to exercise criminal jurisdiction on every reservation, I believe, except Red Lake in Minnesota. I think they're the only one, as I understand it, that's exempt from Public Law 280 for criminal matters.
Senator Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, criminal matters too, of what level of offense?
Well, that's where I'm saying if the purpose of this bill is to protect public health, it's probably regulatory. If the purpose is to prohibit smoking at public establishments and to make it criminal, then it might be enforceable. Ultimately, maybe the courts do have to decide, but the Indian reservations in Minnesota, except for Red Lake, it's not accurate to say we have no jurisdiction whatsoever there when it comes to criminal enforcement. We do.
Senator Murphy?
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Neville, you're correct. But I believe the level has to raise to a felony offense before you'll find law officers in Minnesota going on to the sovereign tribal lands to pick somebody up. And last time I checked, I think smoking was slap on the hand, a little fine, and head out the door. So I don't think it rises to that level.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I, too, think that when we're talking about a misdemeanor that we can't really talk about it in the criminal sense, and I'm concerned that if we bring in this conversation with regard to this bill, we've now opened up a whole nother discussion that would certainly raise more controversy than even this very controversial bill. And so I would ask if we could have that be a separate conversation. If there's some senator who wants to raise that issue in a separate bill, that would be one possibility or to take it up at a separate time, but I'm just concerned that we shouldn't put that issue in this bill. Thank you.
All right. Let me, Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman.
You got a chance to get up and go to the bank.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Just a little tip. I've been here for a couple of years. Senator Schein, the Jewish or who? Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, it's interesting listening to Senator Murphy how this is this own country. You know, when we run for office, Senator Murphy, I don't think we can receive funds from France and Iowa and all these other places. So I don't know how. Something to think about.
All right.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Senator Day, for trying to drag my name through the mud.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
All right, we're not going to get go into the mud here today. We're just, yes, I know. Dick Kolb, Osseo American Legion. And are you coming up with Marlon Ronning, former state commander of the American Legion, also? Good. Welcome to the committee. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. By way of introduction, my name is Dick Kolb. I'm the adjutant and gambling manager of the Osseo Maple Grove American Legion. I'm also a past district commander of the 10th District American Legion. For the record, I'm a non-smoker. Gave them up 13 years ago. Most people are familiar with the Surgeon General's report last June regarding the effects of secondhand smoke. The Surgeon General's report contained a statement that smoke-free laws don't harm businesses, and I disagree with that. For 9 months of 2005, Hennepin County had a no-smoking ban in place, and the results were devastating to our business in Osseo. Being located only 3 miles from Anoka County, our smokers went elsewhere for their hospitality. As a result, our charitable gambling business dropped anywhere from 25% to 38% per month during that nine-month period. We are a nonprofit private organization, and these sales figures came close to closing our business. As a result of the reduced sales, we had to eliminate donations such as scholarships and school safety patrol, and limit other donations such as American Legion baseball and Boy State programs. It is my contention that a full statewide smoking ban will result in similar drops in business, particularly to communities such as my birthplace of Austin, that are adjacent to neighboring states with no smoking ban. I encourage you to pass a partial smoking ban, not a full smoking ban, which would result in amendments to the next legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there so other questions?
I got the hint back here.
So our next speaker is Marlon Ronning. Oh, excuse me.
Oh, there was a question.
Senator Latz has a question for you. Excuse me.
Thank you.
You didn't get out quick enough.
Madam Chair, sir, I would assume then that you would feel that Anoka County ought to be under the same rule with regard to allowing smoking or not allowing smoking as Hennepin County, so that Osseo would have a level competitive playing field with the clubs in Anoka County. Is that correct?
My concern is that we're on a statewide level playing field, but my concern from past experience is that any community that's adjacent to a non-smoking neighbor is going to suffer the same devastation we did.
So, Madam Chair, sir, so I think I understand you correctly then that you may not want to have a smoking ban at all, but if we have one, you would like the rules to be the same in Anoka County as they are in Hennepin County and statewide. Is that right?
What hurt us in Osseo was that our neighbors had the availability of smoking. And from my experience, and as a non-smoker, it would hurt the entities, the communities that are adjacent to Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa, and to the casinos, like we've heard earlier today. something to take into consideration.
And Madam Chair, sir, do you think that bars ought to be subject to the same rules that the service clubs are subject to in this regard?
My comments don't direct that, and I have no comment regarding that.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Kolb. And our next speaker, excuse me.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I didn't hear all of your testimony, but did you comment on what's the dynamic that's going on with this other group, that the veterans who are against smoking? I mean, do you have any perspective on whether it's just your American Legion or VFW or statewide?
I mean, I think if I can defer to our next speaker, he's a past.
Is he going to address that?
Legion.
Okay.
He can give you an example of statewide.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? And our next speaker is Marlon Ronning, the former state commander of the American Legion. And welcome, Mr. Ronning.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, members of the committee. I, too, want to thank you for the opportunity to speak before you this afternoon. My name is Marlon Ronning. I was the state commander of the American Legion in the year 2005. I was also chairman of the commander's task force at that time. And for the record, I'm also a non-smoker. I gave up smoking in 1977. As a state commander, I visited many communities in and outside of the metro area. While traveling in the metro area, I observed the loss of individual patrons and revenue of many veteran and non-veteran businesses. Those closest to the boundary of the then smoking ban were the hardest hit. Many of the regular patrons of those businesses within the Hennepin County, all they had to do was cross the boundary to continue their social activities and the freedom of their choice, whether to smoke or not to smoke, in an environment also of their own choice. I've seen many veterans and non-veterans businesses take personal initiatives with great cost to present a place for socializing for both smokers and non-smokers. Many have installed new equipment to remove the smoke. As an example, my own post in 2004 installed a new system of considerable cost, and the results were actually terrific. We've had many individuals tell us they don't mind coming in because the smoke just disappears. So we have both smokers and non-smokers. However, I believe the potential loss of both individual employment and the monetary loss, both proven by history of the previous smoking ban within Hennepin County, will be, and I'm sure is, going to be detrimental to the state of Minnesota. Therefore, since I am a firm believer we're going to have a smoking ban of some type, I encourage this committee to support a partial smoking ban.
Are there any questions, Senator Latz?
Madam Chair, sir, I know you're not with the VFW, but I'd like your reaction to the comments that the new president of the National VFW, in his inaugural remarks accepting the new presidency, that he supported all of the service clubs, or at least the VFWs, nationwide going smoke-free.
Madam Chairman, through to Senator Latz, I'm also a life member of the VFW. I'm also a life member of the DAV. And as far as I recollect, every individual still has a right to voice their own opinion, because the individual in charge of the National VFW has given his voice. Doesn't mean that's the voice of his organization. That's merely his own personal voice. I don't know if I answered your question correctly, but I hope I gave you some perspective of what I'm thinking.
Thank you. Madam Chair, sir, one other question. Do you think that it would be fair to the bars in Minnesota to exempt the service clubs but to cover the bars with a smoking ban?
I don't want to go on record against or for. All I want you to do is to consider an even playing field, whether it's a partial or whether it's a full. I've seen, And there are posts within Hennepin County right now that are within the boundaries of the 10th District of the American Legion, which I'm very active in, namely Bloomington and Golden Valley. They have different rules set up by the local cities to govern the smoking, which is more stringent than what is currently in place within Hennepin County. Bloomington had a membership of almost 3,000 members at one time. They were the one of the largest posts that we have in the American Legion nationally. They are on the verge of losing their building because of the smoking ban. You're going to lose an organization within a community that gives service back to the community that no other organization does. They donate out their post home for many activities through the community. It's a meeting place. It's been a meeting place since we were established in 1919. Golden Valley is another one. Golden Valley is and the Golden Valley VFW also are both worse off than other posts within Hennepin County because of the stringent rules that Golden Valley, City of Golden Valley, put upon them. They're going to lose their post homes also. They're going to lose their businesses. It's a fact. And I can assure you that in speaking with even the veterans we have in the service nowadays, it's their choice as to whether they want to smoke and where they want to smoke. We should not let politics come into play with some of the decisions, especially like the smoking ban. I mean, if you're going to make the smoking ban, make it even for everybody. If you're not going to do it, then don't do it.
So does Senator Latz again?
Yes, Madam Chair, sir. So if I understand, well, first of all, the VFW in St. Louis Park lost its building, too, before any smoking ban became an issue because of declining participation. And as I understand, quite candidly, the majority, the vast majority of the memberships of the service clubs are World War II veterans that are, frankly, not around as much anymore as they used to be. It's a declining membership.
That's true.
And that's probably, I would suggest, a much more significant impact on the economic health of the service clubs than a smoking ban either way. But it sounds to me like what you're suggesting is that you'd like to have an even playing field between jurisdictions, between cities or counties and whatnot, but not an even playing field between hospitality establishments.
Yes.
You want a different set of rules for the service clubs than would apply to the bars. Even though you basically do the same thing, except for the common history of the membership in the service clubs.
I think what's in place right now where you have more than 51% of your business that comes from liquor versus food, I think that's a good policy. When I used to smoke, I would go into a restaurant. I never sat down and smoked. When I got done eating, I got up and I left to make room for somebody else to come in and sit down. I want to be careful what I say because I just want to say that make it an even playing field. If you're going to do it statewide. If you're not going to do it, then don't do it. I believe there will be a smoking ban of some kind. In my heart, I believe that.
Those
businesses that do have income of over 51% in liquor, I think should go into the formula somehow or other. Mm-hmm. Those that have restaurant that's less than 50%. My post is not a restaurant. It's not a place. You can come in and get food, but it's not a place where you come in and sit down and eat and get up and leave. It's a place where you come in to visit with people that you have served in the military with, to talk about old times. It's a different environment than in a normal restaurant.
Thank you. There are eight more people on our list today. We would like to get through all the testifiers. There are three more questions here from Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just make a quick comment. As we've talked about this level playing field between jurisdictions, we should remember that Minnesota is not an island here, and we have Wisconsin and Iowa and South Dakota, and I won't talk about any of them other than North Dakota, where the North Dakota Senate failed to pass by a 2-to-1 margin their smoking ban. So the communities along Minnesota that abut North Dakota will have this unlevel playing field between jurisdictions that we have been referring to. And, you know, I don't know how, as we move forward with a statewide all facilities smoking ban, you're not going to have negative effects to small communities of Halstead and Oslo, and let alone the East Grand Forks. Now, Moorhead is a little different because Fargo and Moorhead are working as a joint deal. But, you know, we're picking a lot of winners and losers as this moves forward, and I sure hope this committee figures out what we're going to do in that regard as it moves along.
To Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to respond a little bit about the story of the article that Senator Latz had brought up about the VFW commander, the incoming commander. I wanted to explain, make sure members knew what that was about. About 2 weeks ago, I met with a group of folks from my district that came, and they've been to all of our offices, I'm sure of it, and that was something that was brought up because we discussed the exemption for service clubs, American Legion's VFWs, and one of the proponents of the smoking ban said, well, have you heard that the new president of the VFW is has come out in his inaugural speech, I think it was, is the article I had read, and talked about a lot of the things that the lady for the first vice commander from the Coon Rapids Club talked about, and it was very forward-thinking. And the proponent for the smoking ban was saying, this is backing my case that we need to have a smoking ban. And I said, well, send me the article. I'd like to take a look. And it was a lot of those things. It was talking about the necessity to look to the future for the survivability of service organizations like the VFW and the American Legion to survive, that they really need to consider this. And then I read that article, and I thought, okay, this does not bolster the case for the proponents of a government-imposed smoking ban. This bolsters my argument by saying that this is something that should be decided by the organization. He was not extolling everyone to come around to say that the government should impose a smoking ban. He was saying to his member organizations, saying, you clubs, you need to get with the times and you need to be responsive to the market needs and the pressures of what the new generation of veterans is, and then you need to respond accordingly to become the service organizations of the future that you need to be so you don't die out. So that my point is that that new commander of the VFW is not saying we need government to come to our rescue. He's saying we as clubs need to do this on our own, which is why I asked the previous question about why are these individual clubs not getting together on their exec boards and looking around and seeing that the average age is about, you know, well, advanced, and we need to look to the future here, and why isn't more of that happening? That is the trend that he was responding to. And then also one last point is drawing the distinction between our service clubs different than bars and restaurants. And I think they are. I think we treat nonprofit service organizations, and we cut them a lot of slack in a lot of areas. In many ways, we treat charitable gambling different than other forms of gambling. We treat different things like that. So, yes, there are some differences. It's not, they're just not all for-profit organizations, and they could be treated differently. And I'll let Senator Latz respond to that. I see his hand going up.
So, Senator Latz, again, we have 8 people to testify that we wanted to get in today because you're here. Certainly, you can go on, Senator Latz.
Just to clarify the record, Madam Chair, I chose my words very carefully, Senator Gerlach. I did not say that the VFW president supported a statewide imposed smoking ban. I said that he supported the clubs going smoke-free. And it seems to me that his suggestion is that in the end, in the long term, it would be better for the service clubs to go smoke-free than to continue to have smoking in the service clubs.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gerlach.
Of course, Senator Latz. I knew you'd choose your words carefully because you're a trained lawyer, and I just wanted to interpret those for the rest of the committee.
Thank you. And Senator Neville, did you have a question?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's move on to the next one.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Ronning. Our next person to testify is King Wilson, who is with Allied Charities of Minnesota. Welcome, and thank you for coming today.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is King Wilson. I'm the Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. Allied Charities of Minnesota is the trade association that represents charitable gambling organizations. I provided to the committee, and it's just being distributed right now, some information You know, charitable gambling in the state of Minnesota is a $1.3 billion industry. Charitable gambling in the state of Minnesota contributed over $50 million in taxes to the state of Minnesota last year. The state of Minnesota is the single largest beneficiary of charitable gambling. We also donated and had available $64 million over that in charitable contributions. I'm here today to inform you of some of the economics of how the bill, as it's drafted, is going to affect these 1,400 organizations that do charitable gambling in Minnesota. These organizations are in virtually every community in the state of Minnesota. I think you will find that most communities have several organizations, and I think that's one of the things that really is nice about charitable gambling, and is that the fire relief does things different than the Lions, which is different than the VFW, which is different than the athletic organization. But when a community is all said and done, because the money in these communities is not all going to just one niche, it's being distributed in that community in a variety of ways. I think the main point I want to emphasize is that the bill as drafted is going to cause a significant decrease in the dollars spent on charitable gambling. It's going to cause a significant decrease in the taxes paid to the state of Minnesota on charitable gambling, and more importantly and most importantly is it's going to cause a significant decrease in the dollars available for these various 1,400 nonprofit tax-exempt organizations to have available to give to the various worthy programs and projects that they support all around this great state. You know, the fact sheet gives you some of the facts and figures. Again, this happens to be the fiscal year of 05. Recently, the board's come out with their fiscal year 06 numbers. This is the calendar year. It does show, again, the individual years as well as collectively. We're over $1 billion paid in taxes. Again, this is paid by tax-exempt nonprofit organizations. Another sheet here, this is something that has been prepared by the Minnesota Gambling Control Board. This is the agency that regulates us. I'd like to make it very clear the agency is neutral on smoking bans. However, as over the last couple years, as various communities, cities, and townships and counties have done various bans in various different ways, they have taken a look at how the numbers play out. And I think, you know, what this shows is that those that have full bans, those communities have taken very significant hits. Those that have partial bans have not taken as big a hit. And the thing that really strikes me is while there have been communities on the borders of these various communities, the significant hits that the states or areas that have had bans, whether it's full or partial, we have not seen a dollar-for-dollar increase at the communities by it. As a matter of fact, I think I would say that it's been a significant decline in the ones that have it and a slight increase in those that do. It is our guesstimate that if the bill goes through as it is that charitable gambling organizations will see about a 25% decline in charitable gambling sales. The orange sheet, the very first column, looks at the gambling or the state of Minnesota and the total sales, and then down below it in the italicized is showing 25% less. And basically, long story short, is last year we had $64 million in available for contributions, $51 million in taxes. If we see the 25% decrease that we project, that's going to drop the state's take down to 38.3, a significant decrease, as well as the monies available for contributions is going to be roughly $33 million, which is close to a 50% decrease. The blue sheet here is something that we'll use our friends across the northern border in Canada. It was an article that came out last year after Ontario did an anti-smoking law. Folks like myself projected that sales were going to decrease, thought it was going to cause some problems. On the flip side is an update of that article after a year in effect. It indeed showed that that these charities saw roughly a 53% decrease in their profits. Attendance, at least at bingo, declined 25%, and sales declined 27%. So I think it just shows that the projections are very possible. Also on this orange sheet, we picked out 11 organizations around the state. I think, you know, what it shows is that there's going to be significantly less dollars in charitable gambling. We have to live within an expense limit that is upon us by state law. And as our sales decrease, unfortunately, our expenses will not be able to decrease as much. If that pull tab booth, whether it's a bar op, booth op, however it is, we're open from noon to midnight. And as our sales decline, our expense level is going to go up. The current level is 60% for pull tabs. There's a little higher end for bingo. And what a significant decrease like we estimate is going to happen is it means many of these groups are going to struggle to meet their expense levels. It basically, a decrease like we're suggesting is going to happen is something that it raises the expense level 7 to 8%. There were some organizations, the South St. Paul VFW, that they were significantly below where they needed to be. This still keeps them there. However, many other organizations will jump up above that. And yeah. If an organization's expense level is above the 60%, when they come up for licensure, they will have a problem. And there are some solutions. They can reimburse. If they have to reimburse, we know there's going to be pending legislation that's going to impose some penalties and sanctions possibly on them. Or they will dip into many of the groups do have an expense carry forward, something that was in a bill that passed last year, and that will help keep them alive for a while. We're very concerned about where a smoking ban statewide is going to go. I think if we had our preferences, like our friends from the hospitality industry, the local preemption would have been something that was important. We believe that there are some good models out there. I think the Ramsey County-styled exemptions in what's in their ordinance would be something that would be very good for the legislature to take a look at. We do have a little bit of a niche in our business that really isn't covered by something that we hope that you'll take a look at, and that is those organizations that do their charitable gambling in bingo halls. Bingo halls aren't restaurants. Bingo halls aren't bars. And unfortunately, the bulk of their customers are smokers. We've seen in the cities that have done full bans in St. Paul, all four bingo halls within a short period of time have closed. And so if there were a way to carve out for what's maybe 15 to 20 bingo halls around the state, we'd certainly like you to look at that. A statewide smoking ban, as proposed in the bill, is going to have a significant negative impact on our ability to do what we want to do, which is to contribute to the many different worthy programs and projects that we currently support. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to ask if we could hold questions, if you might be able to come back on Wednesday for questions, because we have two people from outstate that we would really like to hear from today. Are you...
Madam Chair, committee members, we would be happy to come back Wednesday.
Thank you, in case there are. The next two testifiers are James Forward from Cossack's Bar in Chisholm will be next, and then following him will be Tom and Jerry Platts from Tom and Jerry's Corner Bar in Sanborn, Minnesota. Thank you for venturing from Chisholm. The Education Committee was just up on the North Shore on Friday, and all is well when I was there.
Yeah,
so,
it
welcome.
Is well. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman and Senators. My name is James Forward. I'm the District 7 MLBA president. I'm also a retired first sergeant in the United States Army, 23 and a half years. Bought a little bar up there in Chisholm. Me and my wife, just a little working man's bar, 25 by 120. I don't know where this smoking thing is going, but I think Senator Bach has a real, real good point that if we make a total smoking ban in the state of Minnesota, there will be hundreds of thousands of dollars lost in tax revenue. I don't think that anybody here can even dispute that if you would take a look at the numbers.
Yeah, they're going to come back. Yes, so I just put
that. And I think it's about... I think it's about the people's right to choose where they want to go, and what they want to do. You know, I think that a person should be able to come into my bar, and have a beer and a cigarette if that's what they want. I'll put a sign outside and say this is not a smoke-free establishment. I've already spent many dollars putting in air exchangers and exhaust fans and stuff like that. I don't know what else to do other than that. And for the record, I am a non-smoker, and also my wife is a non-smoker. But, and I,
go along with what the I'm also a lifetime member of the American Legion, the VFW, and the Disabled Veterans Association, and but I just don't feel that.
You have left a couple more.
Well, I feel that there's too much government here. Maybe a little bit too much government. You're taking away. I went to Chisholm, Minnesota, and I put up my money, and I bought that bar, and I pay my taxes. I pay my liquor taxes, and I don't think that anybody should have the right to tell me what kind of establishment I run. I think that it should be a freedom of choice, like I say. I'll put up a sign. If you don't want to come in my establishment, don't come there. There'll be plenty of other places to go. I think that there's going to be some sort of a smoking ban in the state of Minnesota. I think it, I wouldn't support, but I hope that it goes like to a 50-50 ban or something like that, because I really don't feel that clean air is the issue here anymore. If we're really worried about clean air in the state of Minnesota, then let's disband all tobacco sales in the state of Minnesota. We'll dump the $450 million that we get from that, and by golly, we'll all have some good lungs. And then we won't have to be here worrying about this. Thank you very much.
We're going to try to, in the next 10 minutes, get through the opponents. And I think we'll wait till.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Forward's my constituent, and I've actually been in his establishment. And I realize he's took the chairman's advice and walked away. But there's an example of somebody who fought for this country for people's individual rights to make a choice. And he bought a bar, and he made a choice. And the veterans have made choices. And we're sitting here saying, we're going to take away all your choices because we're smarter than all the rest of you. Well, you know, anytime that there's an individual choice to be made in this type of thing, we shouldn't be legislating individual choice. And an owner of a liquor establishment should be able to say whether or not they want to have individual choice and whether or not they want to have smoking. And I'd be willing to bet if he were still at the table and I asked him the question what would happen to his establishment if we banned smoking in there, that he'd have a heck of a time keeping that thing afloat. Because I know they do exactly what the commander said over here. People go in, they have a drink, and they have a smoke, and they get social. And they stay there. They don't leave after they get done eating like they do in a restaurant, but they stay there, and they have a couple drinks, and they have a couple of smokes. And I don't have to go in there if I don't like the smoke. And I don't have to go in there if I don't want to have a drink with these people. And this is about being American. This is about having a choice to do things, folks.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz. Is that kind of me? Do we want to get moving or no?
Yes,
take it.
Well,
no, I'm just kidding. Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I'll bet if the gentleman were still here, he'd indicate that if there were a VFW or American Legion in his community and the VFW or American Legion were exempt from a smoking ban, that it would not be fair if the bar were covered by a smoking ban. I would also, he's not here, so we can't ask him the question. But I understand the official position of the Licensed Beverage Association to be. I shouldn't speak for them. But.
All right. This guy's not Elvis.
I'm not Elvis, that's right.
Did not leave the building. Welcome.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to take up the time, but he came all the way down from Northern Minnesota and may not want to make the trip again on Wednesday, so this might be the only opportunity to ask him. Sir, if you had a service club like a VFW or American Legion in your community, I assume there is one in Chisholm.
There is not one in Chisholm. There is one in Hibbing. There's a VFW in Hibbing. There's an American Legion about 7 or 8 miles away from Hibbing where is it? I don't know. It's 7 or 8 miles away.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question then. If bars were covered by a smoking ban, would you want to see the service clubs exempt from the smoking ban?
Well, that's a pretty much a loaded question. But
sir, it's the question. It's a policy
you're catching
question.
On, yeah.
You just want me to get my butt kicked when I leave here, or what?
We're going to have to make some decisions along that line.
Well,
so.
And I agree with you. If there's going to be a statewide smoking ban, then make it up. Level playing field. I don't believe that we should have a statewide smoking ban 100%, but if we are going to have one, and that's what this committee is going to decide, and if it's the way, and if that's the way it's going to be, then put everybody on the same playing field. You know, it can't be, well, the guy right next door to the VFW that has a bar, you can't smoke there, but the VFW, you can smoke in there. But the membership is down so low that you don't really have to be a member, so you can just sign in or have somebody sign you in. So now they're used to having 16 people sit around there on happy hour having a cigarette and a beer, and Joe Schmo next door is used to having 50 or 60 people sitting around there drinking and having a good time and socializing after work. All of a sudden, it's just reversed. So if we're going to do it, we got to do it. You got to do it right, or don't do it at all.
Oh, Northeast.
Okay, we're going to try to get Tom and Jerry Platts from Tom and Jerry's Corner Bar in Sanborn.
What's in Sanborn? Oh, it's not.
And maybe Dusty's Bar, and then we're going to move on. Welcome. We've only got a few minutes, so thank you for coming.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I won't take up much of your time. I'd just like to tell you what we do and explain the situation we're in. We're about to the point of retirement. We've been in our business for 30 years. We've just got a small bar, and we also have a ballroom in Sanborn, Minnesota, which is barely open for weddings and for community. It's more of a community center than anything. And I want to tell you what I think should be done with smoking. My ballroom is about 50% non-smoking now. It's up to the wedding party or whoever rents it to tell me whether I put up a no-smoking sign or not. So I don't have to make that decision. Let the customers make it. I ask you to use common sense and do the same damn thing. Let our customers make up their mind what's best for them. We're not here to, we're losing more rights in this country every day. I talked to somebody the other day, just came back from China, a missionary, and he said they have more rights over there now than we have over here. And this is what's happening. We're taking away rights away from people, and I don't like it one darn bit, and I'm wondering what I'm going to do about retiring. Are you going to help me? My business, if you go through this no-smoking ban, my business will be worthless. An empty building in Sanborn, Minnesota is worth nothing. Goes back on the tax roll 5 years later. That's all I ask of you. Use some common sense.
Are you down by the Iowa line down there?
Yes,
I am.
Are
you southwest?
Southwest Minnesota.
Okay.
We've got a casino 20 miles away from us, Jackpot Junction, we compete with. Business is down. We're in a declining population in a small farming community.
Okay, other than that, things are going pretty good, huh? All right, we'll try. Well, thank you very much. Did you want to say hello?
This is my wife, Geraldine. She's also in the business with me.
Okay, we're going to hear from Pasquale Steb, Dusty's Bar in Northeast Minneapolis. And then what we're going to do is we're going to adjourn and we're going to do the amendments. We're going to take about 45 minutes. There's about two more that should testify next Wednesday, or we'll let them testify. And about 45 minutes for the amendments Wednesday. I'm just sorry we couldn't get through it, but we're not going to hold back any testimony. And good afternoon and welcome. And we've got about 3 minutes, so.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Welcome.
My name's Pasquale Stevie, and I own Dusty's Bar at 1319 Marshall Street, Northeast Minneapolis, a family-owned small business for 55 years. My parents owned it for 30 years, and I've owned it for the last 25. It's only 1,000 square feet of service area, about the size of any small corner bar you see throughout the state. Prior to the smoking ban, my business had been increasing gradually every year. Now the increases are gone. I've been under the smoking ban for almost 2 years. My business is down about 30%. Good days, bad days, it's always about 30%. And since the smoking ban, there's only been a handful of good days. I wake up each morning with a deep feeling of frustration. Then I go to the bar, ring out the cash registers, and end up angry each and every day. I'll tell you, it makes it mighty hard to do the meet and greet thing each day. I've only got 6 employees. I had to let one of them go last summer. My full-time employee is an Iraq war veteran who has been with me for the last 9 years. People always say they're for the little guy. And I point and say, doesn't it get any smaller than that? It doesn't, does it? Employees suffer the most. So now we want to level the playing field. In other words, let's make every small bar or restaurant in the state suffer. My suggestion is this. Why doesn't government leave us alone for once and give us something? We bear through all kinds of legislation, 0.08 and the like. So why don't we get something like video lottery in our businesses? If we are to level the economic playing field because our businesses are hurting. People always talk about the common good. Everything for the common good. Without protection of individual personal property rights, there cannot be any common good. There must be protection for individual rights. In this society, we protect our sexual freedoms. A woman's right to end a pregnancy is protected, and yet I can't use a legal product on my own personal property. These are all adult decisions. All it takes to make one fair and equitable statewide ban is one little sign placed on my front door of our bars and restaurants, non-smoking or smoking. Then as adults, we can decide. Thank you. Oh, also, about 7 years ago, I put in an air system for about $35,000. Last 2 years ago, I put in a patio for $20,000. Now my patio is 50 by 10 feet. My neighbor is one wall. I'm the other wall. There goes my investment. Thank you.
Okay. Pasquale, thank you very much. Now, we've got, I believe, two significant bills up Wednesday, but we do have time to probably devote 45 minutes to an hour to this and get it out of here. That's the schedule. We just have to get out of the room. So thank you very much, Senator Sharon and members, and we'll see you back here Wednesday.
What time?
12:30. Cheers. Meeting's adjourned.